Just after dawn, August 12th of 2014, a cab driver outside the St. Regis Bali Resort waited for his passengers to return. The young couple had handed him a heavy suitcase to put in the trunk, told him to wait, and disappeared into the humid morning just as the sun was rising. Minutes ticked by. The driver popped open the trunk to return it to the hotel. Then he noticed the dark red seeping through the bag zipper. He went to the police and watched them unlatch the suitcase. A woman's body was inside, knees pressed to her chest. That's where the crime scene ends, but this story began 8,000 miles away, in a house on Forest Avenue in Oak Park, Illinois, where love, codependency, grief, resentment, inheritance, and control lived together for years before one of them killed the other. The most haunting revelation in this murder was predicted by the victim on the record to police months before it happened. The jolting headline murder would make noise for 10 years. With passing time came three trials spanning the globe, more confusion, lies, and public confessions.
Since I've been a kid, I've heard, the truth sets you free, the truth sets you free. And I never understood, but I'm Heather Mack, and I want to be set free. I don't want to live in a lie anymore. When I was 10, my mother killed my father in a hotel in Athens, Greece. 2 weeks before I came to Bali, I found out that she killed my father. And I made it up in my heart, in my mind, my soul, in my blood, in the oxygen running through my body, that I wanted to kill my mother.
Welcome to Killer Jeans. I'm Melissa. Thank you for spending time with me. This is Before the Suitcase, 86 Calls for Help, the Heather Mack story. Let's get it started.
They want justice. They want answers.
What stands out to you about his personality?
What's the family want most of all?
But you were just the last person to see her.
Get out of my yard. There's an arrest warrant. And leave.
You have a lot of weighty accusations.
Heather Mack's scene in that video clip was recorded in a Bali prison and posted to YouTube after being convicted of killing her mom. You'll hear a lot more from her, but to digest the gravity of her words, we need to understand her childhood and upbringing. Heather's younger years were filled with opportunities many dream for, a big house and a safe neighborhood, and opportunities money garners. She grew up in Oak Park, a leafy Chicago suburb where the streets feel like postcards. Porch swings, tall elms, families who knew each other's dogs. It's the same village that gave the world architect and writer Frank Lloyd Wright and Ernest Hemingway. It's a place where art, intellect, and ambition are supposed to thrive. Heather's parents fit that mold. James L. Mack, a celebrated African-American composer and educator, he taught jazz and classical theory at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Sheila von Wies Mack, born to Midwestern academics, held a master's degree in music and political science. Polished, articulate, comfortable, at the symphony or at a faculty dinner. They were a study in opposites, if you will. James was warm and spontaneous, at times in the clouds, as most creatives are, hearing or seeing artistry in all things and capturing it. Sheila was precise. She was disciplined. Friends said their marriage was affectionate, but at times volatile. And in 2006, everything broke. That summer, the Max, James, Sheila, and their daughter Heather were vacationing in Greece when James suddenly collapsed in their hotel room. He was not murdered by Sheila, as stated by Heather in the prison clip you heard. He died of a pulmonary embolism. a blood clot that moved to his lungs before help even arrived. Heather's bombshell theory is insightful into the level of rage she held against her mom, and it's a reoccurring burn to an open wound for the Mack family left behind. The level of resentment would start to unravel, leaving a grieving widow to soon be at odds with her daughter. Instead of shared grief, they became divided. What followed was the kind of grief that turns homes into archives. Sheila kept James' music scores stacked in boxes, his photo on the piano, his name on her lips. The house was quieter than usual. The only safety net left behind was money from a settlement over James' medical care that went into a trust, roughly $1.5 million. Most of it meant for Heather when she reached adulthood. It would sit there quietly, gathering interest and soon resentment. Not long after James' death, the calls for help began, and it would remain consistent for 9 years. The Mack home became known to police officers up until about 2013. Oak Park Police logged 86 calls to the family home. Sometimes it was a missing persons report, sometimes domestic disturbance, sometimes a hang-up followed by silence. Officers learned the address by heart. The call logs screamed domestic abuse. In January of 2010, a heated argument boiled over. According to the police report, Heather, then 14, punched her mom's broken ankle during a fight. She refused to press charges against her daughter. A year later, February of 2011, another call. Sheila told officers Heather had pushed her into a wall, breaking her arm. When she reached for the phone, Heather ripped the cord from the wall, cutting the line. That day, Sheila showed police the cast on her arm and said, quote, this is a direct quote, I should not be afraid of my child, but I am. And she was embarrassed to even talk about it. She was intimidated by her daughter. Because of domestic laws, officers had to arrest the teen. The first of 5 times Heather would be taken into custody. Now in 2012, another complaint. Heather bit her mom's wrist, leaving a deep bruise. Again, Sheila refused photos and prosecution. She told police, she's my daughter. Locking her up won't help. By 2013, Oak Park officers had an informal rule. If a call came from Forest Avenue, they went in pairs. And over these years, Sheila would confide in an officer saying she felt terrorized by her daughter and feared for her life. But bloodline and maternal instincts of hope outweighed the fear. At Oak Park and River Forest High School, Heather met a boy named Tommy Schaefer, 2 years older than her, lanky kid, polite. He was trying to launch a rap career under the name Tommy EXX. He came from the city's south side, raised by his mother, Kaya Walker, who described him as soft-spoken, artistic, and not straight. Heather was drawn to him instantly. After years of living inside her mother's orbit, Tommy, well, he looked like freedom. But to Sheila, he looked like danger, an older man, unemployed, and from just a completely different world. By her senior year, fights about Tommy consumed the household. When Sheila demanded Heather end it with him, Heather just simply ran away for days at a time. Oak Park police filed reports, found her safe and sound, and brought her home, and watched it all repeat over and over again. In 2013, Sheila sold the family's large Oak Park house and moved to Chicago's Gold Coast, hoping that proximity to museums and new schools might quiet things. But it didn't. That winter, Heather became pregnant with Tommy's baby. Family friends later said Sheila had already forced her to end 2 earlier pregnancies. Now she was threatening to do it once again, even seeking a power of attorney to control her daughter's medical decisions. Heather, then 18, told Tommy, and he promised they'd raise the baby together, and she believed him. The last vacation, In August of 2014, Sheila booked a luxury vacation to Bali, first-class seats on Emirates Suites at the St. Regis, a final attempt at bonding before college. She told her friends, Heather didn't even want to go, but they went anyway. Within days, and in an act of rebellion, she used her mother's credit card to buy her boyfriend Tommy a $12,000 business class ticket to join them. When he landed, he texted a cousin, Robert Ryan Bibbs, back in Chicago. Those messages later entered into federal court as evidence. It read like a blueprint for disaster. Tommy says, quote, she's really trying to knock her mom off, Bibbs says. She's got to do it smart. Suffocate her or something. That's the move, Tommy says. She's got $1.6 million. We'll be in on 1 month. Couple mil, probably. Now, prosecutors would later say those words sealed their fate. That was all the evidence they needed. August 12th of 2014, the St. Regis lobby camera catches Sheila Von Weismack, elegant in a white blouse, arguing with Tommy, Heather's boyfriend. She didn't even know he was coming. Witnesses hear raised voices, threats about the baby. Sheila storms off to her suite, and hours later, Tommy follows her in. What happened inside lasted just minutes. Hotel staff report hearing a loud crash. Sheila's skull was fractured by a heavy fruit bowl. Prosecutors said Heather held a pillow over her mother's mouth while Tommy struck her in the head repeatedly. They then stuffed her body into a silver suitcase, taped it up, and hauled it through the lobby. A bellman helped even load it into this taxi, and then they vanished. The cab driver waited 30 minutes before noticing the blood trickling from the zipper. At the police station in Bali, officers opened up that case, and inside lay Sheila, 62 years old, knees folded, head bent, a mother now reduced to evidence. Police found Heather and Tommy at a budget motel in Kuta trying to flee. Heather claimed robbers had attacked them. That story quickly collapsed within hours, really. During interrogation, a test confirmed she was pregnant, and the pregnancy spared her from Indonesia's death penalty. Both were charged, and Tommy with murder, Heather with assisting. At trial, Tommy confessed to striking Sheila, but said it was self-defense after she choked him and threatened their unborn child. Heather wept through the proceedings at times, smiling at Tommy from across the courtroom. In 2015, verdicts came in. 18 years for him, 10 years for Heather. 3 months later, she gave birth to a daughter named Stella inside an Indonesian prison. Inside the prison walls, Heather oscillated between remorse and celebrity, or rather, infamy. She granted People magazine interviews saying the following about her mom. These are direct quotes. She said, she never wanted to be separated from me, and yet she also hated everything about me. It was complicated. She told reporters she slept in her mother's bed until her teenage years, that their fights were two-sided, and that she still loved her. In 2017, she posted videos from prison to YouTube declaring, I made up my mind in my heart that I wanted to kill my mother. I don't regret killing my mother. I regret bringing Tommy into it. Listen to this YouTube video. It contradicts the evidence first, saying Tommy was lured to Bali with no idea what she was plotting.
We were going to Bali, so I began to plot. I began turning off Tommy's phone, taking Tommy's phone when he was asleep, starting in Chicago, taking Tommy's phone and having conversations between Tommy and myself, texting myself, having fake conversations, and then deleting them before he could see them. I did that because part of me knew that with this plan of killing my mom in a hotel, that she might... I might get arrested. I didn't want to get arrested by myself in a different country. I came to Bali and I told Tommy that he was going to come here for a vacation. In all reality, I stole her credit card and bought him a ticket without her knowing about it. I trapped him here. And that is what I regret. I don't regret killing my mother. And as evil as that may sound, that's my reality. If somebody killed Stella, I wouldn't regret killing them either. But I regret bringing Tommy into it. I regret being selfish. I regret trapping an innocent person into this because it was my battle. It's my mother. It was my father. It's my mother. It was my father. It was my battle. I'm sorry to Tommy Schaefer for trapping him.
But this video goes against Tommy's text messages to his cousin Bib, contradicting the fact he didn't know Heather was going to kill her mom. It's clearly stated in those text messages. So she did later retract those videos that she posted, claiming she was in stress. By then, the damage was done, and Sheila's family called the videos a second murder. Heather goes on to say Tommy wasn't the one who beat Sheila to death. It was her. And shows no remorse for killing her mom, turning on the tears in hopes her boyfriend would be spared on appeals.
I killed her myself. And then I told Tommy that if he did not help me clean the room and get rid of the body, that I would tell the police that he did it. I would pay money to get him arrested. So he helped me clean it. He ran with me. In the court, the same thing happened. My lawyers and I, because of the fact that if I get money, if my article that I was charged with was not that I'm the one who killed her, I'm still entitled to the money, and therefore I can pay the lawyers more. So we told Tommy together, my lawyers and I, that if he didn't take the blame in the court, that he would get the death penalty. So he lied in the court because of me. My motivation for doing this was myself. It's from inside of me and it's my battle. It wasn't Tommy's. Tommy's an innocent man. And an even more innocent man is Ryan, Tommy's cousin. And the only thing Tommy is not innocent of is hiding the body. And the only reason he did that is because of me. Because it was so burning and so deep in my heart, my plan, that I didn't think. I involved him and I hurt him and I hurt Stella. And I'm sorry, Tommy Schaefer. I'm sorry. I love you. I really love you. And if I could go back, I would do it myself. And I'm sorry that everyone who ever knew you now thinks you're a murderer when you're not. I'm sorry you won't be able to get a job. I'm sorry everybody thinks that you're some crazy killer. This is the truth. And whoever is watching this, don't hate Tommy. He's innocent. I'm not. I love you, Tommy.
Perhaps this was in response to a letter penned by Tommy from his Bali prison facility. Here's an insert from the lengthy, scathing, and remorseful letter. More remorseful than Heather showed. He goes on to say, I was manipulated and controlled by an uneducated, evil, controlling person with a primitive mindset. I'm forever appalled with myself. However, controlling this monster was, holding myself 100% accountable for my role in this tragedy is very important to me and in my life today. Can you imagine being so normal in saying these words? Having so many friends, role models, being a role model yourself, and this black hole of dark energy bumps into you and you get sucked in, he continues to write. And after it's all over, it's embedded in your life. And it's taken everything you've ever had or dreamed of away. That's how I feel about that evil girl and what transpired. it may have seemed like I was very lovey-dovey when she, who should not be named, won't even say her name. That is so far from the truth. She and her lawyer forced me to continue to keep up this fake facade, each with their own sick reasons. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense now, but it will later, I promise you. The amount of bravado made me cringe. The world deserves to know the truth and not to hear it from an imbecile of a child raising a baby in prison. A child who manipulates everything she touches and fails to realize how insensitive and connected, disconnected we are as humans. He continues his scathing. She is a sociopath, and yet, another blow, she's the mother of my child. I mean, just chilling, absolutely chilling from him. Now, by 2021, Indonesia's Independence Day clemency and, of course, good behavior credits ended up shaving 3 years off of Heather's sentence. Heather walked out after 7 years. Stella, her daughter, on her hip. Cameras waited. She told reporters she wanted to stay in Bali, saying it's, quote, safer than in Chicago. Indonesian officials disagreed. They wanted her gone. Within hours, they deported her to the United States. And when her plane landed at O'Hare Airport, federal agents boarded and arrested her on the spot. The new indictment, conspiracy to kill a U.S. national abroad, plus obstruction. Because Sheila was an American citizen murdered overseas, U.S. jurisdiction applied. Now, we start the second trial for Heather Mack. In June of 2023, Heather pleaded guilty. Prosecutors played text messages the Bali court had never seen. The Bibbs plea, the confession videos. The government asked for 28 years. The defense asked for 15, counting her time in Indonesia. On January 17th of 2024, the judge, he imposed 26 years. Noting this, saying, quote, this was a brutal, premeditated crime. The victim was your mother. There can be no greater betrayal. He ordered more than $250,000 in restitution and a $50,000 fine. At sentencing, Sheila's family filled the courtroom. Her brother, Bill Weiss, stood first. He says, if it were up to me, Heather would spend the rest of her life in prison, he said. You have never shown remorse. Sheila was wicked smart, generous, with a smile that could light up a room, and you stole her from us. Family friend Diane Edelman told the court Sheila was not an abuser. She was the one abused. Onita Mack, James' niece, spoke of a father's family shut out, saying we weren't allowed to know Heather. Sheila cut us off. So maybe if she hadn't, things would have been different. Mixed opinions there between the family on Heather's future and what should be done with her. But from the gallery came muffled sobs. Heather turned around just once towards them and whispered, I'm sorry. In the aftermath, yet again, Heather Mack now serves her sentence at the Federal Correctional Institute in West Virginia. She'll be in her 40s when she's eligible for release. Tommy Schaefer remains in an Indonesian prison. Robert Bibbs finishes his 9-year federal term in 2026. And that trust fund that once tethered all three is closed. Courts awarded it to Stella Schaefer, Heather's daughter, who lives with a relative in the Midwest. In 2024, her guardian told reporters she recently told the child the truth. Your mother and father killed your grandmother. The girl cried for hours and then asked if her mother would ever come home. Not for a long time, she said. Oak Park, Illinois has changed since then. The house on Force Avenue has new paint, a young family filling the porch with laughter. But the police logs remain 86 entries deep, a reminder of how many warnings a tragedy can have before anyone listens. Heather once told People magazine she thought about her mother every day in prison, saying, I wish I'd found some way to get her help and to get me help. There's the saddest truth of all. The help was called 86 times. No one found a way to make it stay. As a reminder, here's a list of cries for help before this murder. 2004 to 2006, when her dad was still alive, early domestic disturbance calls, often verbal only. Reports note Heather's defiance, Sheila's refusal to press charges. In 2006, James Mack dies of a pulmonary embolism in Greece, and police note family follow-up for a welfare concern. January of 2010, an argument escalates. Heather punches her mother's broken ankle. No arrest, no charges. In 2011, a push leads to Sheila's broken arm. A phone cord yanked from the wall and 911 is called. In 2011 also, threats and missing persons report after Heather runs away for 3 days. In 2012, Sheila reports a bite on her wrist. Once again, declines prosecution. 2013, multiple welfare checks as Heather turns 18. Police note, patterns, mutual conflict, no charges. 86 documented visits to the home. 86. In the end, prosecutors said her actions were premeditated and the motive, it was greed, resentment, control. Heather Mack addressing the court, she says, "There's no excuse for trying to harm her. I miss and love my mother." But her remorse was shown years too late. In the end, Heather Mack and Sheila Mack, they weren't just mother and daughter. They were two people trapped inside the same grief, circling the same wound, each calling for help in their own way. 86 times, that house in Oak Park cried out, and still no one could untangle the love from the violence, from fear, from the need. They kept trying to fix it, to stay bonded together, even when the bond had already rotted through. Maybe that's the tragedy buried beneath the headlines and the suitcase. Two women who couldn't live without each other and couldn't survive together, couldn't find peace. Love doesn't always look like safety, right? Sometimes it sounds like a knock on the door that just comes too late. That is our episode for today. Thank you for tuning in to Killer Jeans. I'm Melissa, your host, and I'll see you again next time.